Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Everyone, and welcome to Gather Round. I'm Ruth Anna Marte Fio, and tonight's guest in about 10 minutes is Michael R. Gorman from Bardic, from the Five Rivers Bardic Collective, and also he has a show right here on Aramarte Fio called Five Rivers Radio Hour. We'll be talking about both. At our half hour, we have Sarit Jacobson with more news from Palestine and possibly some other countries. We'll see where tonight goes. But I'd like to make an announcement. First off, tonight, this weekend is, in Chicago, is being observed this Saturday. It's the Divest Monsanto Day of Action. And you can find out more about that online, and I'll also post something on the Aramarte field. We need to do as much as we can. This is basically, anyone can come out and be in this, because we're asking people who have invested, maybe unknowingly, in companies that support Monsanto to take their money. Take your money and run. It's very easy. I was in a group that, you know, I was trying to make sure that they didn't invest in Israel and a few other things that I just didn't believe in. And I could never really get straight answers, unfortunately. So I had to take money out. And, you know, if that's the case with you, do it. I think, though, I mean, by law, they're bound to tell you, but it seems like there's ways to get around, like, everything. So be aware, if you are investing, whether it's through work or whatever, know where your money goes. And so that's May 9th, Saturday here in Chicago. And, oh, I'm sorry, that's Friday. Friday, not Saturday. There will be a demonstration, and this is not the only one. I mean, they're going to be around the world. May is a big anti-Monsanto month, so keep checking. In international news, just something that is horrendous, and I think that maybe some people aren't aware that in Nigeria, there's a group called Boko Haram. And, you know, loosely translated, this means Western education is a sin. Well, this group, they are not winning supporters by their actions. Recently, they have kidnapped over 200 girls, and now they've just kidnapped 8 more. And, you know, they're threatening to sell them all. They have sold some for $12. So, you know, the world needs to get involved. Supposedly the UN is, you know, going to do some or say something, but saying something just isn't cutting it. There needs to be more action taken against them. Nigeria is having a lot of problems with them. They've been operating a lot in the northeastern part of the country, but they're not exclusive to that area. So on happier notes, I want to mention, you know, I've been talking about simplicity and simplifying your life, things like that lately on the show. And I just wanted to reiterate that one thing that people can do besides recycling is to reuse. And that's also sometimes called upcycle. So before you buy something, there's two ways to go about this. You figure out what it is that you need, and then do a real major look through of what you already have, see if you have something that will work. And the other way you go at it is see something that you have in your home, your garage, at work, wherever, maybe walking down the street, you know, it's garbage day, people have things out. Look at an item and see if you have a use for it. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, you might have a use for it in 5 years, leave it. We're trying to simplify. But you see something, just think, well, now that would make a good whatever. You know, it doesn't have to have anything to do with its original purpose. I'm thinking right now of dresser drawers. I've seen so many really, really nice, efficient, very useful things made out of them. And two in particular, I've seen them hung on fences around posts as a pot or a flower box, I should say, like a box, you know, depending on the size of the drawer, but with dirt in it, soil in it, and plants, whether it's herbs, flowers, other kind of plants. That's one thing you can do. Also, I've seen them just lined or stacked irregularly on the ground with the same idea of growing things in them. So also, I've seen them hung on walls as a interesting kind of shelf affair. So, you know, you stagger them, whatever. There's so many things. So that's one thing that sometimes if you're walking down the street or driving by, you may see a few drawers and it's like, okay, the chest is, you know, shot. Nothing would slide in or out at this point. But you can grab a drawer or two or four or five. So, you know, just look at things with a new eye. And this will keep you from spending that hard-earned money for items that, in many cases, are made by people making 40 cents a day. You know, there's no need to support that. The more we can get away from the corporate rule, the better for all of us. So think about upcycling. And I've talked before about meditating. Another thing that you might want, I found this lovely, lovely YouTube channel, and it's Donna Eden's Energy Medicine. And I'll post this on Aaron Martefio also. It's it's amazing. We all know we have toxins in our body. Toxins build up from not just eating bad food, which some of us aren't doing anymore, but from the air we breathe, the chemicals in the air, chemicals in a carpet. You go into the doctor's office or some office, this carpet, particularly if it's new, it's off giving all these gases. You know, we have a lot of toxins in our system. So some of her energy medicine exercises are just to really eliminate or at least cut way back on the toxins. Then she also has many kinds of exercises just to get the energy flowing. And to get the energy flowing, you've got to get rid of the toxins, straighten out the lymph glands. And she has wonderful exercises that are very easy to do. And I was impressed because I know some people who say, well, you know, my physical condition is such I can't exercise, I can't do this, I can't do that. And in fact, my cousin for a while was teaching people who were in chairs. She was exercising them, you know, because they could do things. And so Donna Eden from Energy Medicine also shows how to do different things in chairs. Or if, and you don't even have to be in the chair, but if you're, you know, not doing that well, there's so much you can do without exerting yourself. Like if we were to tell you, okay, you need to get out there and start jogging up and down the block. Well, a lot of people aren't in that kind of condition. And, you know, that this is not so much, this will get you in a better shape, but this isn't about bodybuilding or really looking good. This is really to get the energy going. So I will put this on our Aaron Martefio page, and I suggest that you look her up because there's so much good. And, you know, I like to share what I find with you all. So that is it for bits and pieces tonight. And we're going to come right back with our guest. Hello, Michael.
Hey.
Hey. Michael Gorman is very, very busy. We've got him for 20 minutes tonight. He's coming from Sacramento. And I said at the beginning of the show that you are in the Five Rivers Bardic Collective. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that
before we get into it? Five Rivers Bardic Arts Collective is a group of artists, writers, musicians, dancers, people that have been kind of working on the cutting edge of the arts in Northern California, and sometimes are ignored by the mainstream venues. And so we do house concerts, we do art shows, we try to create venues for some of the people that may make the mainstream a little bit nervous. So, of course, there's a lot of pagan artists that work with us as well. We're a branch of a group down outside Yosemite called the Chrysalis Institute. They graciously decided to be our umbrella for our nonprofit status. And the guy who runs it knows that I hate all the government stuff and the IRS and the paperwork. And he said, well, if you want to just stay permanently under us, my wife will do all that, and you can just concentrate on the arts. And I'm like, yeah. So, yeah. And for me, as my path is a druid. And, you know, in the ancient times when you went to study under the druids, your first 2 years were the arts, because they understood that in order to be a true wise person, a teacher, you needed to be able to do that shift of consciousness that artists do. You know?
I didn't know that. So I didn't know that in the first 2 years. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, yeah, and it was a practical thing as well. I mean, the druids were the first to practice universal education, and obviously books were too expensive to be traveling around Europe with. And so they had to memorize a great deal of information in order to go out and teach it to people. And, you know, you may not be able to remember what you said yesterday, but you can remember the lyrics to a song you listened to in high school because the arts provide this automatic memory system for getting things, you know, word for word and correct. So that was one of the practical reasons. And, you know, of course, education research nowadays says that if you want to open the synapse between a kid's brain and have him do well in all his subjects, put them in the arts. That's how it's done. And I kind of like, yeah, well, you guys are finally catching up with my druid ancestors 4,000 years ago.
Yeah. Well, now, isn't that something now here in this country, the U.S., arts programs in schools have been cut, if not eliminated?
Yes, and over and over and over again, without exception, the research says it's the best possible thing to get young kids involved with if you want them to do well in school. Which kind of begs the question, does our system really want kids to do well in school?
I was just going to say that that's not the purpose of our schools anymore. It's to turn out drones as
right.
In
I mean,
people.
I taught high school for 10 years, and I loved my students. I loved teaching writing. You know, kids would cut for senior cut day, come back for my creative writing class, and then go cut again. You know, so but I was constantly frustrated by administrators who it didn't take very long to realize, oh, I'm teaching these kids to think and question and probe and discover, and what the system wants is good citizens, you know, which is somebody who'll sit in an ugly brown uncomfortable desk in a straight line between other students sitting in ugly brown uncomfortable desks, completely silent, ignoring each other, and listening to one authority figure in the front and taking down everything they say as gospel, which
right. Kind
of sounds like fascism to me.
Yeah. And instead of working together, competing. So
Right.
Yes, it's, they don't want you to teach the kids to think. So this is where parents who are aware really more than ever have their work cut out for them.
Yeah, my son, you know, from sixth grade on was getting in trouble for asking questions and probing and wanting to know stuff or pointing out something that was erroneous. And, you know, I had raised him, that's what an intellectual does. And, you know, I felt bad when he just started getting harassed all the time in school for, You know, his sixth grade teacher loved him, but she said, "I just don't know what to do with him. I don't know how to answer his questions."
At least she liked him. She wasn't telling him to shut up and,
right,
you know, just write the answer I told you down. So, I mean, at least he had
Although
that.
Although she did have a favorite phrase, and at the end of the school year, Mac wanted to get her a T-shirt that said, "Mac, that's very inappropriate." Because that's what she says to me all the time.
That's funny.
He'd come home one day and say, why is true stuff inappropriate in the classroom? I don't know, Mac. I taught for 10 years. I haven't figured that one out.
That's funny. Oh, my God. Well, speaking of educating, though, you recently spent a little time with a person who's called the Dalai Lama of the Rainforest. And you're going to have his interview on your show tomorrow. But I mean, he's been traveling, educating people, because we don't know that much. I mean, I say we, I'm just generalizing about the rainforest. We hear about so much of it being cut down to graze cattle for fast food restaurants and about the plants that are disappearing and things like that. But there's so much more to it. He's from an indigenous tribe that hasn't had contact with the outside world for very long. Am I right?
Yeah. The Yanayami have only been in contact with the Western world about 30 years.
Wow.
And, you know, one of the things that I find incredibly tragic and frustrating is living in California, you know, people talk about the gold rush in California as this, like, really cool thing, but it was, like, one of the worst environmental disasters in this country. There are still streams in California. You can't eat the fish if you catch them because there's too much mercury from the gold mining.
Okay.
There are still places where complete hillsides are completely washed away and there's just round river rocks because they just washed the dirt down to get the gold. And of course, devastated the Native American people here.
Oh.
And, one of the things that the Yanayami are going through is there's a gold rush going on their property. So they've got all of these miners coming in. They're ripping up the land looking for the gold. Davi talks about it as a fever that white people get, which is also how the Native Americans in California talked about gold fever.
Mm-hmm.
And because people get irrational. And they're also dealing with the fact, like so many indigenous people, when the Westerners come in, there's all these diseases that they've never been exposed to and have no immunity to. Davi had to watch his parents die of the measles as a young kid.
Oh, my God.
And it was because the white people came in and brought disease. I mean, the fact that he actually is civil and loving to us, I find phenomenal, given the devastation that's happened to his people, you know, and it's like we haven't learned anything since the California gold rush over 100 years ago. You know?
It seems like
we're
very
doing it again.
And that kind of thing. Yeah.
What's
well,
that?
I said we're very slow learners, but also corporations, they just don't learn. I mean, what they learn is how to keep in slavery and subjection other people.
Right.
That's what's true.
And, you know, and one of the things that I find in Western culture, I've been doing a lot of research on my tribal Celtic ancestors, and I'm struck by the fact that one of the most destructive philosophies that the Roman Church consciously tried to teach people was that only people have souls, and the rest of nature is just raw material and stuff. It doesn't matter in the big scheme of things. And once you look at nature as just supplies for your own desires, there's no limit to the damage you can do. You know. Whereas if you think of the trees as relatives, you're not going to go chop them down for no good reason.
Well, that's it. And I mean, being vegan, I see this a lot with people and animals. They refuse to acknowledge that animals have feelings and that animals have children that they care about and try to nurture and try to hide and protect and all of these things. So
when I was a kid, I was destined to be a druid. I mean, my dog Amber, she's a collie, was my best friend in the world. And when the nuns at Catholic school told me that my dog didn't have a soul, I didn't get mad at the nuns. I didn't argue. I just thought inside my head, poor nuns, they're not very bright. Giving real compassion for nuns because they were women, obviously, who didn't have very good brains, because how could you look at my dog and not know she has a soul?
Yeah. That's it. And, like, I've looked in too many eyes of cows, and I've watched them take care of babies when they had the opportunity. And, you know, to think that it's okay to kill them to eat, it's like, this is ridiculous. I mean, as long as people, and, you know, humans have a real thing about cannibalism. And to me, there's no difference. I don't get it, because you're eating flesh, you're killing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, yeah. But, so the jungle, now, he is from Brazil, right? This is Brazil.
Yes. Brazilian rainforest, right near the border of, I guess, it's Venezuela, just north of there.
Okay.
So they're in the northern Amazon forest.
Yeah.
And apparently that area has been very, very isolated for a long time. And in fact, Avi said there are still native people in the forest that have managed to elude the white folks. Who knows how much longer they'll be able to do that.
Are they doing that intentionally, Michael?
Eluding the white folks?
Yes.
A lot of them, the ones that have seen what have happened to the indigenous people that have contact with the white world, are, you know, of course they're not going to want to be around those people. They're going to make their villages sick and die of plagues and
right.
tear up the forests. I mean, Davi talked about the Yanayami people have hundreds of plants that they use in cooking and medicine, things that we don't even know about yet. And he says, you know, if you need to preserve the rainforest because it's this amazing resource you're not going to get back. And you've got these people that have been living in it all this time that can teach you. So you need to be putting the indigenous people in charge of the rainforest and managing it and for everybody's benefit.
Well,
but the gold miners don't see it that way.
Well, now he's going to, you've got an interview with him tomorrow night on your show. So before we talk about your other shows, I just wanted to ask, how did he meet up with whoever is sponsoring him? I mean, he's from this tribe way back in the jungle. How did he become, and I know he doesn't speak English, but how did he, you know,
right. He actually originally he had to learn to speak Portuguese so that he could talk to people on the outside. That's the language of Brazil. But you know, he was basically, he didn't really have a choice as far as coming in contact with the Western cultures. You know, they invaded his territory. They, you know, his parents died of disease, and here's this young boy suddenly on his own. He came from a family of shamans. He had a shaman who was training him, and he hooked up with another shaman, and he started realizing that, you know, the white people weren't going to go away. There had to be somebody that would stand up and speak about this devastation and how that our connection to the indigenous people doesn't have to be a bad thing. We can all benefit from it, and he just started speaking out more and more. The guy who helped him write his book, and I'm trying to remember what his name is. It's terrible that I don't have it. Was just interested in the rainforest and the indigenous people, and got to know Davi, and they became really good friends. And he started opening the doors for Davi to travel abroad and talk to people. Bruce Albert is his name.
Well, so he
really amazing guy.
Well, he has a mission then. I mean, that, and he was fortunate too. But of course, that was no coincidence either that he met up with people
and
who did this. I wanted to ask you about
his mission. Is basically very simple. He two things. He said, preserve the rainforest. It's the lungs of the planet. It's the health of the entire planet depends on those rainforests. And the other half is, to preserve the rainforest, you need to put the people who are experts on the rainforest in charge of managing it, and that's indigenous people. So those are his two two very brilliant, very simple, but very profound messages that he says over and over again.
Yeah, they're very pragmatic for all of us. You've had some other interesting guests, and I wondered how, like your mission with the radio show, or your goal, what is the purpose? And tell us a little bit more, we've got 5 minutes, about your past and future guests then.
I just basically dedicated myself to facilitating the fall of the Roman Empire. But other than that,
okay,
you know,
in
studying, that's a story. In studying my tribal Celtic ancestors, there was, people don't realize this, that the Celts stretched from Portugal to Turkey, from the Mediterranean to northern Scotland. They were the third great culture of Europe. They were egalitarian. It was shared wealth. They practiced universal education. Women were absolutely equal under the law. Gay people were honored. Diversity was honored. All of the things that we struggle for in civil rights existed in this culture, in this heritage of ours that, you know, belongs to anybody who has any blood from Europe. And it's been completely left out of the history books simply because it's a threat to the Roman system. You know, what woman is going to want to be run by her husband when she can choose a culture where she's equal? You know, what kid is going to be want to be, you know, property when he can go to school and learn things? It's an amazing culture, and we have been robbed of it. And the more I study it, and the more I realize how much it has in common with the other tribal peoples. And there's a reason why they called the Celts barbarians, the Native Americans savages, the Africans primitives, because they wanted to paint the tribal people as having nothing worthwhile because they were scared that people would actually learn what amazing cultures there were. I mean, the Celts were tribal, and they gave Europe most of its democracy. They were completely democratic culture. They invented the iron that changed the name of the age. They invented the safety pin, for crying out loud, that we haven't been able to improve on. They were the ones that first added copper to gold to make it look really good in jewelry. If you wanted to, you know, show off your taste in clothing as a Roman, you bought it from the Celts. They were this incredibly sophisticated, technological for its time culture that we've been completely lied to, and it answers so many questions of all of our hearts because it was based on wisdom of nature, which is our ecosystem, and the only way we can truly live healthy on the planet is to get back in touch and in harmony with our ecosystem. And we have an example of a culture that existed for 4,000 years sustainably on the land, relatively peacefully on the land, in our own heritage. So it can be done, but they still don't include them in the history books because basically we're the grandson of the Roman Empire, and the system doesn't want us to know that there's another way of living on the planet. And that's bottom line, my goal for the radio show for Five Rivers Bard of Cards Collective is to reclaim that heritage that's been stolen from us.
You're starting to get fuzzy, Michael. You've had Celts, you've had Janet, and who do you have in mind to have down the road as a guest?
There's so many amazing people. I've talked to R.J. Stewart, who's very much in the fairy tradition. And I interviewed him years ago. I didn't realize it was the first time he was interviewed on videotape, and he gave me the best compliment you can give to an interviewer. He said, as soon as we started talking, I forgot it was an interview, and we just talked. So he's agreed to come on the show. We just have to work out our crazy schedules. Mara Freeman, who is a druid from England. Philip Cargam, who is the head of the largest druid organization in the world, is a good friend of mine. I know the people who started the Pagan Pride movement. You know, I'm not a wallflower, so I kind of get out and about and meet a lot of people.
Right.
And it's really paying off of these fabulous people.
You're going to... Definitely, because you're so interested, like you said, in the Celtic knowledge and the background, you're going to, what do I want to say, like major in that part of the pagan world, and then have some other people occasionally, or, yeah, okay, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, it's not that, you know, I'm wanting, because one of the things that I've noticed in doing this research, it gives me a lot of hope, is, I say at the beginning of my book, the greatest social movement in America today does not yet know it's a social movement, because I see parts of the tribal mentality and enlightenment popping up in the women's movement and the gay rights movement among young students that have, you know, that are going to school and ending up in debt. And it's popping up all over the place. It's just nobody knows there was ever a system to tie it all together.
Yeah, that actually worked. So,
you know,
so I think
people who seem that they're from, like, really wildly varied backgrounds are people that I want to interview because they have a piece of the wisdom to bring to the table.
Right. You know, it takes body. Yeah. No, I think that's great, and I'm really looking forward, well, to all of your guests, but to the interview tomorrow. So, Michael, thank you very much, and thanks for your work in gathering these different people to interview.
Well, no, thank you, Roseanne. It's fun for me. It's like, man, I have an excuse to call these amazing people and say, can we talk?
I know, isn't it fun?
And they say yes. I love it.
I know. Rarely do people turn us down, so...
We talk about enlightened self-interest.
That's okay. Thank you so much, Michael.
Thanks, Ruth Ann. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Now we're back. Yeah, Sarit Jacobson. Hello, Sarit.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey. Oh, it's a lovely warm day in Illinois. So,
I heard it was raining in Palestine today. Everyone was happy.
Oh, thank God. It doesn't happen enough.
It does not.
The last big rain we had there. Remember when everything was flooding, and the
yes,
the sewers. It was just absolutely horrible. I hope it doesn't get to that point. But this week has had, there's so many things. What did you want to start out with, Sarit?
We have a conscientious objector who is very sick. I'd like people to send him good vibes and think about him, and let's hope and pray that he gets better.
Is he the one who needs the
yes,
he's a refusenik,
a liver,
and liver, yes, transplant. So please,
absolutely,
please, yes, send him all the good energy, prayers, whatever. I don't understand. Sarit, was he, now he was put in like solitary
confinement
for 2 days, and
40, yeah.
He got sick and they wouldn't let him have any medical help. Did he have, I mean, he must have had some kind of a liver situation before, don't you think? Or I could never figure that out.
He didn't. And it's very alarming when a healthy 18-year-old comes out of prison that sick. When I was in IDF for 3 months, it reminds me of my best friend in IDF. She got sick, and I kept telling the officers, she's too sick to get out of bed, please help her. And they thought she was making it up to get out of exercises. In the end, she had to go to hospital for surgery immediately. I think they do some kind of medical experiments on soldiers.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because too many get sick. Or maybe it's just stressful to be a soldier. I don't know. Stressful to be in in confinement also.
Oh, right. Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that just the whole conditions that they're under, and it's just like here in the United States, when people come back out of the military, so many of them are ill, and it's they may not recognize it as an illness of the heart and soul, but doing the things that they've done, they are. And then, because it's like your immune system gets down. And so
it sure does.
But this young man, I so hope. I mean, you know, with a transplant, it's so horrible because to get that, you know, now the thing is you can have a liver transplant. Nobody has to die for it because as I understand it, you can have a piece of someone's liver. So
okay, that's good. I hope they save him.
If I'm wrong, I'm sure somebody's going to let me know. But I think that that's the George, you're there. If you're by the computer, let me know if I just goofed up.
We got hundreds in administrative detention on hunger strike.
Yes. Almost 2 weeks now, isn't it?
Yes.
I think.
And the problem with administrative detention, I would like to say, is that it's being used just to oppress them, not for any security reasons.
Right.
The proof for that is the soldiers' testimonies who admit to that. And the soldiers' testimonies from Breaking the Silence are talking about using administrative detention as a tool to keep them afraid, oppressed, and quiet.
Yeah.
So
other people, right? It's,
I advise more people to go look at the soldiers' testimonies so they can hear about the settlers shooting at people's windows at night, so they can hear about the settler children beating up people even. And we had IDF soldiers in a settlement called Itar attacked again. So it's all like a bad comedy by now.
It is. It's like a very bad black comedy kind of thing.
We have a new hero in Israel. He is the guy that threatened the Palestinian teenager from Youth Against Settlements with a gun to his head. And B'Tselem attacked him, and now the Israeli media made a hero out of him, so no one can attack him anymore. And the people, the sheep, are following the mainstream media like sheep, cooing.
That is just holding a gun to a teenager's head. I mean, come on. There's nothing heroic about that.
They lost logic.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Well, I don't know.
Their logic is that they are worth more than the others, I guess. They don't see them as human, which is another result of military occupation.
Yeah.
Happens in every military occupation.
Exactly. We can't just blame the Zionists for that, because it's that way, yeah. All armies teach that.
Oh. Yeah, I'm sure.
Sure. I mean, you know, people from the United States, they told me that that's what they're taught. And I'm sure that, you know, you could say that from German armies, the armies in Africa. I mean, everybody teaches the same thing. Otherwise, you don't get people to go out and shoot their brothers. It's just... because it's not who we are as humans.
Exactly.
We don't
not
do
human
that.
Nature.
No. We have to have some lies told to us, and these governments are very big on that. Did you see recently that Egypt has totally, I mean, Egypt...
Oh, yeah.
They fired on Gaza's fishermen. It's like, what the hell? Now they've become Zionists or something? That was just like, what? Are they so desperate for the United States to give them money and support them that they have to turn into Zios now? Because
it's amazing, isn't it?
It is. I was just like, what am I seeing? And I keep reading this. It's like, what happened? I mean, we used to have tunnels, you know, to Egypt and everything, and then they started closing those off because that was what the Zionists wanted. And
now, the Palestinian, same
and
thing with the Palestinians from Syria who are escaping to Lebanon. They got kicked out of Lebanon.
I mean,
back to Syria.
Isn't that?
It's horrific.
I don't know, refugees.
It's people doing to others what they shouldn't do.
Exactly. Well, the whole refugee system. I don't know if you've been following. In Myanmar, used to be Burma, the Rohingya, Muslims.
Yes, followed us a little bit.
There's a bunch of them who were sent to, they escaped to India somehow, and now they're starving in the camp they're in. So, you know, refugees, man, what a horrible, horrible life. You're thrown out of your own country, or you have to run because your life's in danger, your family's in danger, and you get to another country, just like all the Palestinians in Lebanon, though, that are have been there for years and years, in a horrible camp. And the international groups, they can only do so much. I don't know the answer, except not to run people out of their own homes.
Definitely. We need more awake people, and I think it's time to go talk about politics and religion everywhere.
Exactly. That you know that old saying, you probably
yes.
heard it growing up. Yeah.
yeah, know, that's it, what I'm yeah. saying.
Never
yeah.
never when you're, you know, in a nice, polite, proper setting, never talk about religion, sex, or politics. And I'm not all that proper because those are the only things I really talk about when I get with people.
Because that's what's important.
Exactly. That's it. I mean, I'll talk weather a little bit. You know, you talk about this or that. But when it gets down to, like, sitting around the fire all night talking, okay, it's the big three. And
isn't it?
So, yep. So we you're right. We need to do more of that. And just don't. And, you know, women especially, girls especially, and some guys maybe, we're taught to not offend people. You know, well, don't say that or they won't like you.
Yeah, yeah.
I am so over that. I don't
yeah,
care.
Yeah, you must.
You know, just
great.
I don't care who I offend because it might offend them. Because I've had people tell me, well, you know, come in a little lower, slower. You know, you don't want to hit them over the head. And for some people that will work. For other people, they need to be hit over the head. And I don't mind doing it. It's one of those we just have to, you know, that doesn't mean you have to be belligerent all the time and all that, but you don't back down and you don't try to make it nice. And
people no need to give up and no need to lose heart just because it's difficult.
Exactly.
We have to always remember how things seem impossible even when they're not. It's almost
right.
human nature to... or maybe the way we're brought up to see dreams as impossible when they actually are.
Right. Well, that's it. I think that there may have been time, there was a time when, you know, it was like reach for the stars and, you know, dreams can come true. But lately, at least in the United States, that hasn't been the case. And
no.
You know, but dreams can come true, but they don't just come true on their own. It takes a lot of work. And
it does.
So I would suggest if our listeners are having these bad times and they're getting discouraged and all, Sarit and I, we get discouraged, but you know what? We come right back at it. So get in touch with us if you're having a bad time. You know, you want to speak out and you're afraid or something, just find us. We're both on Facebook. Just get with us. We'll cheer you up. No, really, we've learned that, we do get discouraged and depressed sometimes. And, you know, within a few hours, we're back on just, you know, zinging again because we know we're in the right and we know that people
absolutely.
Have to learn. Yes. So, you know.
It feels
good
to do it.
Yes, exactly. Because you never know who's going to hear a certain thing and just say, okay, that's what they were talking about. I get it. Or we might talk about something that really touches them. For me, I think it's the teardowns of the mosques and things that are just because I was raised in a Christian church and houses of worship, no matter what kind, to me, they are sacred, and because I'm not anti-religion, I'm not anti-spirituality. I'm anti some of the lies that some of the people have been told, and you know, but the actual religions and the spiritual thoughts, I'm very much for. And so when somebody is trying to take away that, and we know, you know, houses of religion are also houses of the community. Because you know, people gather in there, even people who aren't religious will often, I know several people that go to church, not because they're religious, but they like the community, the bonds. And So when you just go in and bulldoze that down, you start out by the graffiti and hammering everything down, and then you bulldoze it under. To me, that is really one of those I have no words for. I would say unforgivable, but I guess nothing is unforgivable, but it's the kind of thing that is despicable for sure.
Yeah. Every day I get more reports from Palestine that the settlers go in the mosque, break things, spray graffiti on the walls, say Muhammad is a pig, which is really not nice to call someone a pig in a culture where pigs are not considered clean.
That's why.
Yeah, because back then they didn't have the fridge, and it's so hot in Palestine, 120 degrees some days in the summer. I'm sure everything goes bad quick.
Oh, yeah.
As hot as you can imagine, it gets.
Yeah, but no, they say that because they're trying to get a rise from somebody and trying to anger them. So
yes, yes. Also, settlers got to celebrate 66 years. Is that how much for the state? Something like that. Forgot how old Israel is, how long since 48.
Yeah, 48, that's 66 years, yeah.
And what happened is the way they celebrated is go out in the settlements and the town squares and teach the 3-, 4-, 5-year-olds how to use live ammunition. It was on Revolution News, everybody, so you can tune in to Revolution News on Facebook and see photographs. I probably shared it on my pages, too, but I don't remember which page.
Yeah.
God. And it's really horrific to see a four-year-old with a gun. I don't think four-year-olds should even have toy guns.
No. That's not. Kids don't need those kind of toys. It's just not necessary, not good at all. There's nothing wrong with doing like they used to and having trucks and building toys and all these different things. You don't have to have weapons.
Yeah, just the culture of violence when you get them those weapons. You reinforce it.
But they start out with the TV shows.
Yeah.
For the little kids, they're violent, and whether they have swords or whatever, you know, and then the kids have to have those toys because, of course, their parents aren't smart enough or brave enough to say no. I mean, after all, they're letting them watch that shit, so sure, they're going to go and buy them toys. You know,
I helped have some kids, and I notice if you tell kids what to do, they'll want to do it. If you tell them what not to do, they'll go do it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I learned with kids to back off, and sometimes they'll do weird things, but it's better to keep. Maybe I'm just a bad stepmom, but I don't know. I found out that it's you really can't change a kid's mind much.
Well, you can't change. You know, the thing is, though, you can actually spend time with your kids instead of having the TV as a babysitter.
So there's so much. Kids are more fun than adults too.
When they find out that there's other things to do. I mean, I know people who, like, take their kids to museums and things like this, and these kids are, they're readers, they're researchers, they may be nerdy, but they also have, you know, which is fine, they also have other friends who do the same thing, and so it's not like they're not having friends, but the culture of violence isn't where they're at. And
that's great.
Admire the people who will take the time. You know, I don't understand why would you have children and then stick them in front of the TV from the time, well, they're in their, what do you call those little bouncy chairs you put them in and put in front of a TV. And, you know, so that's where they grow up instead of taking them around, playing with them, doing things.
Yeah.
I don't.
They need to see nature instead of TV. Yeah. Better.
So I don't. The TV has been a babysitter for so many, and I think we can look at our society and see that it has not been a good babysitter.
I think parents are so wore out because of capitalism, trying to make ends meet, and capitalism's just going to devour itself. So I don't see things getting better until we change the system.
Oh, it can't. It can't. As long as we're in a capitalist system, no, this is going to keep happening. So I would just tell people that, you know, if you're going to have to, if you're going to have to work three jobs to support a family, maybe you should think before you have a bunch of kids. There's just, people have to take the responsibility too, and that means for the planet. That means not overpopulated anymore. But it's very hard, I know, for people to watch commercials and not want some of the things they see, and to see that their neighbors have them.
Yeah.
And so they want them. But, you know, I would just say proof that you actually think for yourself, you know, instead of just blindly saying, oh, well, I've got to get that because so-and-so has one. You know, people don't have to be such big consumers. If they cut back on a lot of that, they're not going to have to be working all these jobs.
Absolutely. People don't know that they can be happy without consuming. And they did research where people that lost a limb and people that didn't lose a limb after a year had the same level of happiness. I don't know how they did research, but they did.
I believe that. Yeah. I mean, and that's like their physical body. So
I know. I was shocked.
Yeah. But that tells you.
I think I got it from George Hibberswall.
Okay. George has good stuff for sure.
Yeah.
But now that makes sense because they're not saying that everybody's happy, but they're saying the same percentage. So you're going to have people then that didn't lose a limb who are still bitter about life, and a few people who did lose a limb are still bitter. But then you have the others who have, you know, found what happiness is, and they know that it's in the heart, it's in the soul, it's not in the bank account. So I think that that's what I'm always using that phrase, spiritually bankrupt, because that's how I see this country and a lot of the other parts of the world. And I think until we actually change that, we're going to have these problems, because people, if they don't have that happiness in their heart, then they're much more into the material side of things.
Absolutely.
They just go keep trying to buy something. You know, I mean, it might make them happy for, you know, what, 2 weeks, and then the guy on the other side gets an even newer car, and then they're
unhappy.
You know?
Yeah. That's capitalism, competition. Yeah. Who's going to sell more stuff? Wow.
Yeah, that's not even, it doesn't make sense, but we're seeing it all around the world. And, back to Israel, I mean, like, a lot of the people you know are unemployed because Israel, no matter what the mainstream media says, Israel is hurting. So,
oh, yes, hurting so bad that people are hungry. Old people, it's pretty common to see old people looking for food in trash cans in Israel. Palestine is also probably same situation, but they are nicer society. They help each other more.
Yeah.
My Israeli friends say so. That in Palestine, if a family has no food, all the village will come and help to their rescue.
Yeah.
In Israel, it's not like that. They're like Americans.
See, that's it. In times of real trouble, most people will help their neighbor. I mean, they band together. They
accept. Oh, yeah.
They're interconnected. And so,
yes,
we are. What you do for me, you do for you also. And then what I do for me, I'm doing for you. You know, it's all like that. But in Israel, because there's so many issues, and people are divided, like on the Palestinian issue and things, so they're not going to be as apt to help each other out, I think, because these are big divisions. And then there's the division from the government.
Yes.
So,
gender and race.
Right.
Big deal there. ethnic background is a big deal, not just race. There's big discrimination against certain types of Jews, like the ones from Ethiopia.
If you're dark-skinned, it seems
Morocco,
to be...
Morocco, Tunisia, yeah. Jews. They're third-class citizens, too.
Right.
Very sad. And they get the worst education.
Wow. Well, now, what about them? Do you know, how do they feel about Palestine? I mean, are they...
They're divided.
Yeah, okay.
They're taught that Palestinians want to throw them into the sea from day one. So most of them are afraid to death of Palestinians, so afraid to even talk to them.
Okay.
I was trying to get some of them to talk to Palestinians, and you know what they messaged me? Sarit, I'm scared.
Like,
oh, no, don't be scared. It's a really nice guy, I promise you. You promise me? Yes. Yeah, they're scared of who they're oppressing, and they don't even know they're oppressors. They think they're victims. Like,
yeah.
They're sure they're victims. They don't think it. They are sure of it. If I dare to tell them that they're the oppressor, it's always a big debate.
Well, they're victims. They're victims of the Zionists.
They are.
It's not victimizing them. It's the government. And
absolutely.
Anytime any kind of government allows third-class citizens or whatever, there's a problem.
Oh yeah.
And you know, like that's one of the problems here. The people that are darker, whether they're Hispanic or African American or whatever. If your skin isn't white, you're more apt to land in prison in this country.
Has
nothing to do with a crime or not. It's just people of color are more apt to be in prison. And just because of...
Same in Israel. People have dark skin, they're more likely to be in prison. They actually measured in the 80s when I was a teenager. I'll never forget. It shocked me. That they said on TV that 80% of people in the Israeli jail, not the Palestinian jail, have dark skin. 80%.
See? Yeah. That's it. So, I mean, I feel so sorry for people like from Ethiopia and all who think that Israel is a homeland for the Jews and they can go there and they will be accepted. And they manage to get there. And they find they're anything but accepted.
Oh, they're so disappointed. It's insane. And many go back. If they can go back, many want to go back. It's really sad. Sometimes I get on Facebook in the morning and I have hundreds of Israeli friends and they're all talking about leaving the country. They're all very sad about their lying president. And they're sad to have to see him talk on TV every day.
Oh, every day?
And almost every day, you know, he's very outspoken. He's their president. Always telling them Iran, Iran, Iran. They don't talk about anything. You know, trying to scare them with a bomb.
Just more lies. And, no, his days, they must be numbered. He's gone over the edge. I mean, I really think...
The uneducated, they adore him.
See? That's not unusual at all. To have somebody who is in a position of leadership, the people who really don't know, like you say, uneducated and all, they think he's wonderful. I mean, he's for them. They'll follow him anywhere. And it just makes you want to upchuck. There's nothing good about that. I don't know.
We need to change the education system everywhere. It's
everywhere.
Just horrendous.
Everywhere.
It's just so bad. It's shameful to humanity that people who are 12 years old cannot spell yet. We could spell by the time we're 8, 7. I notice in the Israeli groups, the young people can't even spell anymore.
No, well, you see people who... It just makes me it makes me nuts, but I just force myself to laugh. But I'll see people who are authors who actually write books, and the way they write on Facebook or something, and I mean, sure, I'm going to misspell some words, I'm writing too fast or the cats are helping or something, but if I put out an article, you can bet that there's not going to be a lot of mistakes, run-on sentences, no paragraphs. I mean, these people, they amaze me. How did they ever get a grade in college that let them through? You know, it's, so our education system really...
Maybe they were confident.
Maybe they're... I mean, who knows what... Maybe they were athletic and they got through because the team needed them. I don't know. I don't know how people do it, but I do know that the school system's not nearly as good as it used to be. But
and it's getting worse on purpose.
Yeah.
And we need to wake people up about it and do all we can. Everyone can do something, even just talk about it. We need to get this ball rolling.
About it to somebody you wouldn't ordinarily. That's it. I'm telling people, don't just post it in the groups that are favorable, like to all the Palestinian
groups.
That's good, but start posting in other groups, you know, or pages.
And, yeah.
People. Don't just...
And try to make people think instead of telling them... telling them what to think. Just try to make them think so they think they got it there by themselves. People don't like to be told what to think.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. Just put it out there. I mean, that's part of educating, right? Just put it out there, hopefully. And we know that sometimes it clicks. So, Sarita, I'm going to say goodnight for now. And we'll see you back.
Oh, great, yes. Good night.
Time.
And... everybody needs to make everyone think as much as possible.
Our guest, exactly. Please, post things that catch your interest. Post things we post. And if you do think you're getting discouraged or you just want a little encouragement, contact Sarita.
Call us.
So,
or call someone. Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, and good night to our George friends.